Hey there, guys and gals, all you hip cats, cool kittens, you diesel-powered disciples of cool, our friends and foes. This is the Diesel Punk Podcast live, and we are coming to you live on the Diesel Punk Podcast page on Facebook, as well as the Diesel Punks group. And some of you may be watching this on replay on YouTube. If you're on YouTube, do us a favor, click subscribe and post a comment, and you'll be entered to win a cool Diesel Punk prize.
Can I win?
So I am your host, Big Daddy Cool, John Pica, the voice of Diesel Punk, and with me is pretty boy Cindy B, Corey Hillesheim. How you doing, Corey?
I'm doing wonderful tonight. How are you?
I am doing great. We are waiting for the rest of our team to join us, but we ain't waiting around. The mission starts when the mission starts. And what are you doing? Are they fogging up that bad?
Yeah, they're bad. So let's go ahead and lose them.
Oh, that's funny. Just in the nick of time, it's the one there and only is. Boss Larry.
Hey, guys.
How you doing, Larry?
Doing okay.
Excellent. Glad you could join us. I think it's just going to be the three of us to start. We might have Dark Soul and Eric Fisk joining us later on. But for those of you who are just joining us, pretty boy Cindy B, Corey Hillesheim, and of course, let's see. I can't join you today. We've already got a Facebook user giving us a comment. Says, can't join you today. I'm on break from work. Y'all have fun. Oh, that's Johnny B out in California.
Oh,
okay.
And of course, Boss Larry Amiet, one of the founding fathers of Diesel Punk, is with us, and one of the founders of this podcast, coming to us all the way from Dallas, Fort Worth. How you doing, Larry?
Doing great, Johnny. Hi, everybody.
Hey, you are a little bit washed out with that light on your face. Last time was perfect.
Yeah, I'm coming in late because I've been messing with the lighting and the camera and this crappy webcam I have here. And I'm sorry, folks. I look like I'm whiter than I normally am, and that's saying something, you know.
So. That's all right. We're just going to call you the ghost of Diesel Punk.
Woo. There you go.
Okay. There you go. Hey, all right. Hey, Preboy, want to compliment you on the helmet.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm trying something new this week.
So, Corey, talk to us about what you're wearing.
This is – actually, it's got a hard shell on it, but I took it off because it was too tight, but it's actually a helmet for tankers and helicopter crewmen in the 70s and 80s. And then I took the hard shell off. It looked more Russian. So I said, let's put the pin on there and wear it for tonight. And since I'm more of the military guy, and I knew Eric Fisk doesn't like backwards hats or beanies, and that's what I wear in my modern life. So I figured I'd switch it up and try to be Diesel Punk tonight.
Hey, well, there's nothing wrong with a beanie. A dock worker in the 1920s and 30s would have been wearing a beanie out on the docks.
Well, even soldiers out, you know, in the cold weather had them on. So, but I did order some hats like Larry just put on, the cabbie style hats.
Yeah, the flat caps.
But they have not arrived yet. Yeah, they have not arrived yet. So this is what you get tonight. All this.
I love it. That looks great.
I think
that's fantastic.
I agree.
Now, you were asking me about fedora sizing. Did you end up getting one?
I did not. I ended up ordering the cabbie hats instead, and a newsboy hat, too. I have to go try on a fedora first before I actually order one.
You really should. You really should, especially if you buy one brand new. That's, you know, it's a $200 to $300 investment for a good fedora. And you
want I didn't want to... I didn't want something off of Amazon that was going to be either too small, too big, or just cheap. So I'll save my money and get me a good one here someday. Try to slowly start living that lifestyle.
Good for you.
We love it. We love it. That's all we can ask. And for those of you who are watching, because we are using StreamYard to stream in multiple locations, we don't always see when you join us. So if you're watching, post a comment and let us know. And you'll see that for us to see the comment, you need to give permission to StreamYard to use your profile picture and your name. If you don't do that, it just comes up as Facebook user like this one. And I might not put it up. Just saying, because we want to know who you are. So do that for us, and that will be great. And so, guys, we've got some new stuff to talk about this week. In particular, Penny Dreadful, City of Angels.
Yes.
And I think that's going to be our big topic, Larry, because that's where all three of us kind of have a common thread. But I want to ask, have you seen Miss Fisher and the Crypt of Tears?
I have not.
Not yet. No, I haven't had a chance to yet.
Okay. So I will just share this with the audience. My quick 20-second review, more like a minute. You guys know, because you guys have been part of the podcast for a long time, that I absolutely adore Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries. It was one of my favorite TV series in recent years. And Larry, did you watch it? I seem to remember that you liked it quite well.
Yeah, I watched it too. And I love it. Love the series.
So the series ended, the TV series ended, if you'll remember, with Franny Fisher and Jack flying off into the sunset, you know, to live the great love adventure, the great love story. And then this movie takes place sometime after that. And it starts with a rescue. Miss Fisher orchestrates a jailbreak and a daring rescue escape on a train. But everybody thinks that she dies in the escape. Spoiler alert. And so Jack and Franny Fisher are reunited at her funeral. And he's angry. Something has happened between them flying off together and this moment. They've separated, and he's bitter about it. And she has ended up marrying a sheik. So that's kind of where we start the whole thing. And he's the only character that really returns of the regulars.
Oh.
Dottie and Hugh return for about 30 seconds. And they really act as if they're just kind of there for the paycheck. The other two guys, you know, her two assistants that help her out in the field, I forget their names. The guys, you know who I'm talking about, Larry.
Yeah, they
don't even speak.
Kind of the workmen.
Yeah, the workmen guys. They don't even speak. They just drive Dottie up in the car. And so Jack is the only character who really is around for the whole thing. Everybody else is new characters. Aunt Eunice is there at the funeral. And again, she seems like she's just phoning it in. This movie would have been a good episode of the TV show, but it did not work very well as a 1-hour, 45-minute movie.
Gotcha.
There was none of that sultry sexiness that the TV show always had. You know, that sexual energy that was always there. Jack is bitter all throughout the whole thing. The story is very complicated, but unnecessarily so. And they do dive into the supernatural, which I was happy about. There is a gem, an emerald, that is the eye of this idol in the Crypt of Tears. And the Crypt of Tears brings water to this town in the Middle East, and it's been stolen, and the rightful owner is the princess that Miss Fisher jailbroke at the beginning, and their mission is to take the gem back to the crypt so that the town will flourish. Does this sound like a familiar story?
I was thinking, Temple of Doom.
Temple of Doom. Yep. Yep. And it just felt like after that rescue at the very opening scene, which was exciting and thrilling, the rest of the movie was just them kind of walking around talking and trying to figure out what they need to do. Oh, we need to get the gem back to the crypt. Let's go. They go. They put it back. End of story.
Wow.
It was, you know, I was, I don't want to say I was let down, but I was let down.
That's a shame.
Yeah, me too.
I think if they edit 45 minutes out of it and make it an episode of the TV series, it would have been good. But, you know, I didn't see any of Miss Fisher's daring do, you know. Yes, she rescues someone on a train. She flies into her funeral. But after that, I'm like, you know, where's the Mary Sue that we all love and adore? You know, where's the burlesque performer? Where's the circus act? Where's the, you know, the gunplay? It was all missing. It just, it felt very, they couldn't recapture the magic of the TV show.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
You think they just made it to hope to make a little profit off the fans of the show?
I think so. You know, because fans were so disappointed that it didn't go on for another season.
Right.
And so they made the feature-length movie. And do you remember, did either of you see Serenity? The Firefly movie?
Oh yeah.
I love Firefly.
Zombies in space.
Yeah, Brown Kid for life.
Well, I love Firefly, the series, but I felt the same thing about Serenity. I just felt like they didn't quite recapture the magic of the television show.
Yeah.
They were supposed to make it a trilogy, and they had such high hopes for it, and I think it didn't get it. Since the show ended and they didn't have enough support, they just did the one movie and just kind of ended it.
A trilogy?
And the same thing, they wanted to do like three series movie out of it, and I think just because the show did so bad, they said forget it, we'll just do one and be done.
They killed
well but the show didn't do bad
and they killed off so many characters in the movie. It's
like, yeah, and I think once they decided not to do the trilogy, that's when they started killing off the characters. Oh. Yeah,
well, wait a minute, they only killed off Reverend Book and Wash.
Yeah, but those were some of the most likable characters in the movie.
I thought
they really carried a lot of the series.
There are some comics that continued on afterwards. I've got some graphic novels, and you know, I've seen some fans.
And they are the official canon. But that show didn't do poorly, Corey. Yeah. That show had huge ratings, and anyway, I don't know. We're not here to talk about Firefly, although Firefly,
it kind of had a
Firefly is good retro punk.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
What's that, Larry?
Oh yeah, you're. Oh, I was just saying it was kind of, it kind of had this stuff for the fate of Star Trek, where they didn't recognize the rabid following that it had. But,
yeah.
More importantly, what you were just going with, Johnny, which is that it was retropunk. It was steampunk.
Yeah.
More than anything. Yes, sir.
Yeah, it had steam. It had diesel. It had a little bit of cyberpunk thrown in for good measure. Mm-hmm. A little bit of that post-apocalyptic feel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it had a little bit of something for everybody in our worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just think Fox didn't like it. And they killed it.
They might have pissed off somebody. I don't know.
Yeah, could be. So anyway, that's my thoughts about Miss Fisher and the Crypt of Tears. for those of you who have seen it, I would love to have your opinion, see if you agree or disagree. If you've already watched it, post comments or, you know, join us in a moment. And we got a couple of comments here, and this is for you, Corey. Carlin Stewart from Memphis says, find a good haberdasher like Mr. Hats in Memphis.
Oh.
Yeah. Or Gorin Brothers here in Nashville. Cool. Yeah, actually, that is the place you should go.
Yeah.
Down on 2nd Avenue and just have them measure you.
Yeah, I don't know if you have a retailer here in Texas. Of course, we have a lot of hat manufacturers. Stetson, of course, is a major hat manufacturer here in Texas. And they have a outlet connected to the factory, which is just a short drive from here, about 5 minutes from where I live. And I can get hats Larry, half price.
Well, you, mean,
I get a Stetson for 50%. Yep.
That's nice. Pretty cool. You need to come visit Nashville, though, because there is a hat store on every corner.
I bet there
but,
is.
But Gorin Brothers, they deal with hats and boots. But Gorin Brothers, they deal with our kind of hats.
Oh,
fedoras, flat caps, newsboys. They're very high end quality, but they'll measure your hat for your head for you. So that's cool. Hey, before we get into City of Angels, I want to talk about comic books real quick. There's a new, you know, this or I've been talking about. I think we talked about it on the podcast about. You know, Diamond Distributors closed down during the COVID-19 thing, and Marvel Comics said pencils down. DC Comics is going to start shipping again May 20th. Marvel Comics finally decided they're going to start shipping again May 27th. And,
yeah.
You know, I've been saying maybe it's time for comics to go back to the general newsstand at grocery stores and drug stores like when we were a kid, Larry. And, In the middle of all of this happening, a company came to the forefront, a company called Allegiance Arts, and they have placed 4 brand new titles, brand new characters into Walmart. Exclusive newsstand distribution in Walmart with an end cap display. They're bi-monthly, so the first one came out here in May. The next issues will come out in July.
Cool.
So more than bi-monthly. That's like once every 4 months. Mm-hmm. So quarterly, yeah. Right? But here's one of them. Let me see. Red Rooster.
Okay.
And they originally said in their solicitations that they weren't going to do superhero comics. But that sure looks like a superhero book to me. I
was going to say, what would you call that?
Yeah, well, it is a superhero book, but the story is set. It opens up in modern day times.
Yeah.
But it flashes back, and the majority of the story is in 1930.
Cool.
And it's all about these heroes, Red Rooster, Miss Liberty, Strong Boy, and some other characters. And their adventures in the 30s. And I guess somehow they'll bring us back up to modern times. But the story is really a 1930s superhero story. So for you Diesel Punk comic fans, it's fantastic. And the artwork is beautiful. I'm a big fan of what I call painterly artwork, which means that it's done with a brush, and this one is inked with a brush. And so you get this great, this great line work that you can see the brush strokes. And it just, to me, it's just gorgeous artwork. There's Red Rooster and some of the other characters.
Oh, I can see them now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, really, really pretty, a great fast-paced story. And if you love this sort of thing, you are going to love, love, love this book. Very cool.
Excellent.
So let's see if we have any more comments here. If you are watching and you want to post a comment, please do. Well, let's talk about... Well, before we do this, Larry, Corey, you guys have anything else you want to talk about before we get to our main topic of City of Angels?
Has anybody seen Hollywood?
Oh, no. Not yet.
Not yet.
Oh, let me talk a minute about Hollywood.
Yeah, talk about that.
I love it.
Now, is this reimagining history or is it telling the secret history?
I've made it through one episode so far.
Okay.
And so it's a lot of setup and it's immediately post World War II. So the main character is trying to find work and he ends up getting hired on by this gas station in which he's also expected to be the work as a gigolo on the side.
Well, I mean, why not?
Just a gigolo, and everywhere I go,
exactly.
People know that I'm singing.
So he's making a little extra money on the side as he's pumping gas. So when a lady comes up and says, and he says, what do you want?
Gas ain't all he's pumping.
Right. I want Dreamland. Well, that's code for, yeah. And so loaded in deco, loaded in decadence. It's a lot of fun. And I've seen one episode so far, and it's definitely got me hooked. I think it's something I'm going to follow. Is it retro history? I think it's alt history because it doesn't have it, because it has a made up studio. And Axios or something like that. And it's kind of an alt history, but they're going to gradually get involved in race issues and sexual issues and gay rights issues. And they're going to explore some pretty, edgy subjects later in the series. They've kind of set the base so far. So, it's an intriguing series. I think it's like number two, alternate between number two and number three on Netflix as most popular series right now.
Well, they did a great job of promoting it and advertising it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm into a couple of series on Hulu that they've done a horrible job advertising. But a great show called Motherland, Fort Salem. And it's a Hulu original.
I've heard about that.
And it is so cool, Larry. You would dig this.
Okay.
During the Salem witch trials,
mm-hmm.
this witch, Adler, somehow she uses her power to change the minds of the people about to burn her. And she actually somehow convinces them to put her in charge of the U.S. military.
Oh, wow.
And for the last several hundred years, she somehow kept herself alive and young and has been the executive general of the U.S. military. And girls who are born with the gift, per the Adler Accords, are drafted into the military and trained to use their witch's ability in the defense of our country.
Oh, I've got to check
and,
that out.
It looks really cool.
And it has a lot of retro style and aesthetics. And it's about these three girls who have been drafted from different parts of the country, different socioeconomic places. One is like this legacy. The other one is from the poorest part of the country and, considered like a folk magic user kind of thing. it's kind of like a dirty word. She's from the Sessions. And the other one is from the West Coast. And they hate each other, but they're putting a unit together and have to learn how to not just work together, but become sisters.
Oh, wow.
And along the way, they uncover the corruption that exists in the U.S. military industrial complex.
That sounds really, really cool.
It's really good. I think you would like it in a big way.
I will check it out.
But they've done a horrible job advertising it because I had not even heard of it until my friend Blake, who has been watching, turned me on to it. So that's pretty cool. Okay. And then another one that I haven't started yet, Utopia Falls. It's a cyberpunk story.
Love cyberpunk.
Future, huh?
I said I love cyberpunk.
Well, I think you would like this Utopian Falls. Utopia Falls, it's basically, you remember M. Night Shyamalan's The Village?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
It's a future cyberpunk village where they have basically walled off the city from the rest of the world. And these young musicians somehow discover the truth. And so it's like going to be this combination of The Village, Blade Runner, and Footloose.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
I haven't started watching it yet, but it's on my list. So I'll let you know what I think. And if you guys check it out, let me know what you think. But we want to talk about one of the most anticipated new series on Showtime. Probably, Larry, I've been dying to see this for the last year and a half when I first read the stories and we first started reporting on it. Penny Dreadful, City of Angels. Now, did both of you watch the original Penny Dreadful series?
Bits and pieces.
Same here. I watched like maybe the first season. I found it frustrating and I kind of gave up on it.
Really? Why did you find it frustrating?
As soon as you liked the character, they would kill him off or something along those lines. And I complained and a friend said, that's the nature of Penny Dreadful. You know, it's all melodramatic. And, and I was like, no. And it was pretty gratuitous, I thought, in the violence. Also, I thought.
It was. And there was a lot of sexuality, a lot of nudity in it, which I didn't necessarily complain about. But, I mean, Eva Green, what a dish. There was a lot of, for those of you who didn't see the original Penny Dreadful, it was some original characters and some established characters from Victorian literature set in Victorian London. They never say the name Dracula, but you are under the impression in season one that he is the villain that has kidnapped Murray? Yeah, it was Nina Murray.
Oh.
Her name was Nina. And they recast Nina Murray instead of being the fiance of Jonathan Harker. She's the daughter of Captain Murray, an explorer, adventurer. And Eva Green plays, this psychic, this witch who lives with them and is friends of Nina. And they recruit a gunfighter from America, played by Josh Hartnett, who turns out later on, Larry, to be a werewolf.
Right. I remember
that. They recruit the services of Dr. Frankenstein. And at one point, Dr. Jekyll. And it's kind of like a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but darker, really gritty. They deal with the plague that's happening at the time. Dr. Frankenstein does build his monster, well, who is the monsters. Only. Yeah, he does build two monsters. That's right. And Dorian Gray is a character in it, who falls in love with Lily, the second monster that Frankenstein builds, the bride of Frankenstein. And I fell in love with the series. I was obsessed with it. And I watched all three seasons. And I will say that it doesn't end well for anybody except for Frankenstein's monster.
Right.
He's the only one who survives the entire series. Spoiler alert. And even though he survives, he ships himself off to the frozen tundra of the Arctic.
Well, he had to. I mean, that's kind of how what happened to Frankenstein anyway, is that he shipped himself off. If you read anybody that read the novel, I did like the Frankenstein character. I mean, and the monster, too, to some degree. Although the first monster he built, I thought, was much more endearing. Oh, the second monster.
He was the only sympathetic monster.
The second monster, the one that got killed early on. Yeah, he was only one sympathetic. I agree. And I thought Frankenstein himself, I thought, was a sympathetic character. And I think that's one thing that kind of bugged me is I'm going, I like this guy. You know, you just killed off this character. And, that's my opinion, you know.
Well,
maybe it wasn't in the place. If I went back and watched it again today, I might have a different opinion.
Yeah, sometimes it's all in context of time. But I loved it, and I was hooked immediately. And Josh Hartnett as the gunfighter werewolf was phenomenal. Although it wasn't until season three that we actually see him wolf out. It's all just implied throughout seasons one and two. But there was a lot of suspense, a lot of stuff that you really had to wait a long time to get the fulfillment of. But it was really good. And so when I saw that they were making a sequel series, Penny Dreadful, City of Angels, set in, is it 20s or 30s, LA?
Late 30s.
Okay. Yeah. I immediately was super excited. And from the trailers, it looked like they were going to be dealing with the same kind of supernatural elements that the first series dealt with. So I was really looking forward to seeing vampires and werewolves and monsters in 1930s Los Angeles, the fusion of, you know, horror and Art Deco got me very, very pumped. Now, I will share my – I've only seen episode one so far, but Larry, you've seen through episode three. And Corey, you've only seen episode one as well?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So, Larry, without any major spoilers, give us your thoughts of the series so far. What do you like? What do you not like? And then, Corey, I'll ask you to do the same thing with your impression of episode one.
I absolutely love it. I love it. The mix of Hispanic culture, what in the show they call Chicano, with, and of course, being here in Texas, heavy Chicano or Hispanic culture, all mixed in the portrayal of Santa Muerta. Oh, I love her. This evil sister that's causing this chaos, the prophecy. It reminds me at times of Carnival.
Oh yeah.
It so captures the 30s, and you get this feel that the world's gonna go to hell. In just a brief, it's going to hell in a quick pace. And there's this type of a supernatural role in the world going to hell. And that is kind of, you know, stirring the fire of that. It's Wow. The decadence and the supernatural. I think this is the best small screen Dieselpunk since Carnival.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I see Peter Boy, Pretty Boy, I see you nodding over there on that.
Yeah, I 100% agree on all that. It was such a good I liked how it wasn't it mixed in the Chicano. It was mainly the Chicano culture. It wasn't your typical black and white type of drama going on. We forget there's so many other cultures out there, and that this one's bringing one in and making that the main character. I love it. It was amazing.
And addresses the racism of the time.
Yes.
The racism is, I mean, it's up front. The racism.
That was me.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
But yeah, it's there and it's so much a part. It's so very Dieselpunk with the supernatural, but the warts and all of society at that time. And how much Dieselpunk do we see set in LA? You know, normally we think Dieselpunk in San Francisco, or we think in New York or Chicago.
Chicago.
Yeah, but now we got Dieselpunk in LA, and that's cool.
Well, so all right, here's my thoughts.
Okay.
I was very excited because, you know, the previews showed, you know, what is her name? Santa Muerta.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was really excited to see a lot of the Dios de la Muerta, the Day of the Dead iconography and aesthetics, and a lot of the, you know, mythology around that. But I'm hoping this happens. I'm hoping that we're also going to see something else that is a big part of that region, and that is the American Indian mythology. It should be, in my opinion, it seems like a perfect kind of meeting, Hispanic mythology and American Indian mythology, and I was getting that vibe from the trailers early on. So I'm like all pumped and ready to see, you know, vampires and werewolves and, you know, spirits. Oh my. But the impression I came away with in episode one was it's really a crime noir story with supernatural elements controlling what's happening behind the scenes.
I think you've captured it. You've already captured the feel. I'm three stories in, like you said, and without giving any spoilers, yeah, you've captured the feel of where the story, you know, of the at least the baseline of the story. I've seen some stuff. It's like, wow, I didn't expect it to go there. Okay. I think it's going to be hard to predict where this story is going to go, to be honest with you. But yeah, you've captured the base from which it's going to build from.
Yeah. And I don't want to say that I'm disappointed, but I was expecting kind of more of a continuation of the types of characters.
Okay.
And maybe even a return of some characters who survived the first Penny Dreadful series. Now, that could possibly happen. I mean, how cool would it be to see Frankenstein's monster working as an enforcer at the South Seas Supper Club?
Right.
Or as a bouncer, you know, one of, what's his name? The crime boss in L.A. Come on, help me out here, Larry. The boxer guy. Gangster Squad. What was Why can I never remember his name?
I wish Johnny B was here. He could probably tell us. You lost me on LA.
Yeah, that's going to drive me crazy. In the movie Gangster Squad, he was played by that guy.
Don't you hate it? Yeah. You'll take it at 2 a.m. You will wake up screaming it in your sleep. Wake the whole house
up. Fast Times at Ridgemont High. What is his name?
You really?
Sean Penn?
Sean Penn.
Yeah, Spicoli.
Yeah, Sean Penn plays Mickey
Spillane. I don't know. Two words.
Hold on.
Get me.
Hold on. We're going to consult the Oracle of Google.
The IMDb.
There you go. Lord Google will answer this question for you.
Yes. So, cast Sean Penn, Mickey Cohen. Mickey Cohen was the Al Capone of LA.
Way out.
It would be cool to see Frankenstein's monster. Maybe he's a lieutenant of Mickey Cohen.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe, I don't know. That's what I was kind of hoping to see with the Hispanic mythology and the American mythology.
Right.
Mixed in. Because the first Penny Dreadful, we get European mythology. Right. With vampires and werewolves. So I was looking forward to seeing, you know, some American mythology. And in America, that's Hispanic, right. You know, Mexican mythology, and that's American Indian mythology.
There's some strong diesel punk roots with Hispanic mythology. Cherry Pop and Daddies, their first hit, Zoot Suit Riot, was about one of the great events of the 30s. And it's set in the very time we're talking about here. It's just a few years in the future after the war breaks out. So what was the name of the album? It was like Hey Pachuco. Pachuco. Hey Pachuco, Hey Pachuco.
No, that was Crown Royal Review did Hey Pachuco, but...
Oh, okay. See, that's another reference to this.
Big Bad Voodoo Daddy did Hey Pachuco.
Hey Pachuco? Yeah. Well, that's another reference to this very time frame and some of the characters that you'll find out without giving too much away as this evolves with the Latino culture in Los Angeles and the racism and the race conflicts of that time. Trust me, guys.
Pachuco.
You
want to
watch the rest. Hey, Pachuco.
Royal Crown Review.
Royal Crown Review.
Big Bad Voodoo Daddy did a song, too, I think, Hey, Pachuco.
It was featured in the movie The Mask. That's where I first heard it.
The Mask.
That's it.
Yeah. But anyway.
So, you know, all that, without giving anything away, it stays very focused on the Latino experience. In the 1930s, in the late 1930s LA.
Can we talk about the cast for a minute?
Okay.
A lot of unfamiliar faces to me. The lead character, the lead Hispanic detective, what was his name? Anyway, I don't recognize that actor.
I don't recognize the young man either. But his partner.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about him in a minute. But his brother was on CSI Miami.
Really?
And was in the first series, the original Roswell series. Mm. I want to say his name was Eric. Adam Rodriguez was Eric Delco on CSI Miami. And, you know, here he plays on that show, he was a very, you know, kind of suave, optimistic, kind of guy. And on this show, he's very bitter, very angry, filled with rage. And sure, as we see by the end of the episode, maybe not fueled by his own rage, but by something else acting upon him. And maybe the implication is that, you know, that otherworldly spirit may have been present in his life for some time. But Nathan Lane plays the partner. And I got to tell you,
perfect for it.
Well, it surprised me because, you know, we first hear his voice on the phone. And I was like, who is that? Because all you hear is the voice, this grizzled, obviously an older gentleman, grizzled, you know, experienced. And then when we meet him, I'm like, holy crap. That's Nathan Lane, and not playing any kind of part that I've ever seen him play before. Very tough, very, you know, grizzled, chiseled, very manly man's kind of role.
Yeah.
And that's not normally what he plays.
No.
He's been beaten down. He's been worn down. He's seen so much blood and death and... He's so jaded by what the world is like right here. And in fact, later on in another episode, he tells his partner, you know, something to the fact that the world is broken. The world is bad. He's a very worn down, beaten down character. And it becomes even more so as the series goes on, I'll tell you that much. That's not giving away any spoilers. You pretty much saw that coming, didn't you? You know, that he's a worn down, jaded character that's seen his share of death and, you know, torture over the years. And he's jaded. He's a great actor. I loved him in The Producers, the musical. Have you ever seen the movie Producers, the musical? He's fantastic in that. And
it's great. Nathan Lane's, for me, Nathan Lane's best role was in The Birdcage.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant.
That's the word. Good job, Johnny. You know how to capture.
That's it.
But I was shocked. And, you know, you say that. You know, there's that one scene where we really get a peek into his character. Actually, there's two, but they tie into each other. And talking about Nathan Lane's character, and it's when his partner asks him, "So why did you choose me?" And he just was flat out honest and said, "Because nobody else wanted you, kid."
Right.
And, you know, that was interesting that he would kind of put his reputation, his career, he's at the end of his career, kind of put it online to take this new partner. The name of his character is, by the way, it's Daniel Zovato. Plays,
I thought it was Lewis.
Well, the actor's name is Daniel Zovato.
The main character,
the young man, the young Hispanic detective.
Yeah, and IMDb doesn't list his character's name. That's really weird.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Now,
Nathan Lane is Jewish. His character,
Lewis. Yeah, Lewis Michael.
Yeah. And now I think that's kind of the answer as to why he took on the young man. He's Jewish. He's used to being discriminated against, anti-Semitism. So he felt some degree of sympathy for this young man. When Nathan's character came onto the scene, I suspect we're going to have a comeback. I haven't seen it, I'll tell you that much so far. A flashback to when he was young. And I suspect he's going to say about the anti-Semitism he experienced as a young man becoming a detective. I bet he ran into a lot of what the young man, I don't know his character, Daniel's character, the young Hispanic, let's put it that way. The young Hispanic, I bet he's going to look and say, I was there once. I was this young Jewish boy trying to be a detective. And he took him on because who else would, like he said.
Yeah, it's Tiago Vega is Tiago. Detective Vega.
Detective Vega.
And Louis Michener. And Tiago's brother, Raul, battles Councilman Charlton Townsend. Okay, so if ever there was a character I wanted to punch in the face, I wanted to reach through the TV screen and punch that councilman in the face.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And this was so timely to me, guys, because here we have, this is a spoiler alert, okay? So anyone, it will not be a surprise spoiler alert. You'll be like, oh, of course, this makes sense. But Charlton Townsend is a wannabe authoritarian.
Yeah.
He is a wannabe dictator.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that he's being groomed by the authoritarian forces, the Nazis.
Yep.
Who are trying to get a foothold in the U.S. through Los Angeles.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a great moment where we'll go back to this. You mentioned Nathan Lane's character, Louis Michener. He's Jewish. Mm-hmm. And you remember the scene in the locker room. This is the second scene that, for me, defined his character so well.
Oh,
when
yeah.
the big like beast of a cop,
right,
is giving Vega a hard time, calling him a spick and blah blah blah, and Detective Michener, Lewis, half the guy's size, stands up to him. And I forget what he said, but apparently his past, he's got enough of a reputation that this giant beast of a man backed down.
Yeah.
Because whatever words he said, obviously he can back it up.
He either reminded him that he had a mistress, a Latino mistress. I couldn't tell if it's like, oh, by the way, you had this little Latino that you're banging down in whatever, or whether it was something worse than that, that he did not want to get out. And
Latino child.
Yeah, it was something that he did not want. Right. And Nathan's character, what's his name? Lewis went there and said, you really want to talk about this?
Yep.
You and your Latino mistress or whatever, however he put it. I forget it now. But it was a scandal. And he said, I was just making a joke. You know, he says in reply. Something like that. Yeah. I know what you're talking about, Johnny. He really stood up to him. And it was like, oh, yeah. It was powerful stuff. I've never seen him, to be honest with you. I've never seen the actor Nathan Lane as a serious character in a drama. Have you? Has either one of you seen him in a drama as a serious character?
No, he's considered one of the great character actors of our era. and he's usually a very comedic character.
I saw him in a PBS production. It was Diesel era set where he played a it was a gay character, because I think the gentleman is gay. He played a gay character in the 30s or early or 20s in this PBS production, and he played vaudeville in the production, and he played a dandy, which was kind of like a transvestite character, a character in drag in the 1920s or 30s, but he himself was gay. And it was the challenges he had as a gay man in the 1920s. It was a great production. Saw it a few years back. That's the only drama I've seen where he played something other than a comedian or a comic character.
You might be right. And so we talk about the Nazi party wanting to control and take, you know, invade the U.S. through L.A., and they want to control the politicians and whatnot. And we've got this race war between the Hispanics, and it's over a land deal that councilman just, he refuses to hear the people's voice. And, you know, it's going to erupt into a race war. And on the underlying part of this is this character, Peter Kraft, Dr. Peter Kraft, who, when we meet him with his family and his wife, he's instantly likable.
Yeah, I wanted to like that guy.
Yeah.
Until we find out he is a member of the American Nazi Party and he is a propagandist. Yeah, and this is where this got so timely for me, Larry, is that speech that he gave in the park sounded like it could be spoken today.
I agree.
And you could see, and this is where Man in the High Castle did the same thing to me. You know, it kind of messed with my head because here is this character representing the ultimate evil in world history.
Right.
Saying things that I'm like, well, yeah. Yeah. And I want to agree with you. Mm. And the people around him were like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And then I have to go, dang it.
Right.
They're the bad guys.
Yep. They made him like sniff. He's likable, but he's evil.
Yeah.
That was part of the genius of Man in the High Castle, was to do that. And to, you know, you get sucked in. Now, John Smith was such a likable character in many ways.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, he was so evil at the same time. And when he's speaking, and he's this family man sitting there over dinner with his wife and kids, and you know, and you think he's such a great man, but if you took off the uniform, you think his father knows best.
Yep.
And it was a genius. You're right, John. It was a genius moment.
And so we've got the two spiritual beings. Santa Muerta, and what was the other one's name?
Magda?
Something like that, I think.
Yeah, no, there is a character here. Natalie Dormer plays Magda.
Yeah.
Magda?
Yeah, so she's the evil spirit.
Yeah.
Magda.
I got to learn more about that. There must be some type of history there that I'm not familiar. Yeah, there must be some type of mythology or folklore or something that I'm not familiar I was kind of thinking of her like La Diabla, you know, and yeah. You know, but Magda.
Magda, yep.
There has to be something there that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, I see, and I'm not familiar with Hispanic mythology as much as I wish I were. You know, my specialty is European, Celtic, and Egyptian mythology. But that's why I was excited to kind of be exposed to some different mythology and American mythology. So we've got these two spiritual beings that, and I'm assuming by episode 3, they're still unseen by the mortal world.
Certain ones see them. Certain ones see them. And being very active in the occult community as I am, Santa Muerta, she's an interesting portrayal in the movie. I was very pleased that she wasn't made out to be the baddie. She's kind of neutral, which is pretty accurate in some ways, but she's almost too neutral in that she just will not get involved when asked. So there's a lot of very intriguing how they portray her in the series. Now you give a little bit for, you know, license, right? To the theatrical license to the writers. But she's an intriguing character at this point. The other one,
Magda is just about death and destruction. Magda wants to see the world burn.
She's mayhem. Right.
You remember the very first scene of the show is when we meet them, and Santa Muerta tells Magda, basically, you can do whatever you want, but you cannot touch the boy.
Mm-hmm.
And the boy is Detective Vega.
Yeah.
Tiago Vega. And so he's been set aside, set apart for something special by her.
And we know that his mother is very much a Santa Muerta follower.
Right. When his mother goes to the altar of Santa Muerta and prays to her, that's why Santa Muerta appears to her.
Right.
And I don't remember, did she take action or did she?
And that's where my understanding of Santa Muerta, I think, differs from the portrayal on the show a little bit. She will, according to their beliefs, she will answer prayers to whomever, okay? Whether they're, you know, right, wrong, ethical, unethical, whatever they may be. Okay. She has a reputation of being a deity popular among both the drug cartel and the police. Okay. So she's very neutral because death comes for us all. So she's non-judgmental. And that's why that little moment where she says, I don't get involved, is not quite in keeping with their beliefs of those followers. I don't speak for them, but that's my understanding of it. That being said, the fact that they didn't show her as a baddie, you know, as a heavy, was amazing to me. I was quite surprised.
But she specifically set Vega aside and protected him from the fires that consumed his father. So is he under her protection for all time, or was it just a one-time thing? That's something I'll be interested to find out.
Good question.
I think she's protected him for one big final countdown or showdown. She's protected him for one thing.
It could be.
It
could be.
The last thing that I want to bring up, and this is all just from my watching episode one, this is how deep these shows can get, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have another actress, Piper Perabo, who is playing Elsa. And we meet Elsa in Dr. Kraft's office with her little boy who has a breathing problem.
Right.
And, you know, he just says, oh, it's just allergies. It's not the, I guess it would have been tuberculosis or maybe
probably
whatever, you know, was common then. But when they leave and go into the elevator, mm-hmm. something very strange happens.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this, Corey? Oh, we lost Corey.
We lost Corey. What the heck?
Uh-oh.
It looks like he's kind of halfway there. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he'll be back. You remember the boy?
There's this weird absorption that took place, and it's like he's a manifestation or extension of her. It's so wonderfully creepy. I love it.
It was. Yeah, because he puts his head to her belly and then morphs.
There's you know, hey, man.
Mama. There he is.
Technical difficulties.
Huh?
So I need to do some I need to do some research into what that is in American mythology. I know the American Indians had a spirit they called skinwalkers, which were mm-hmm. shapeshifters, ghouls.
Yeah.
That could be what we're looking at there. I was like, oh, all right. This is going to be interesting.
Any of our listeners, because we have such educated listeners, if they could fill in some of the blanks on this, drop us a note.
Yeah, I would love to hear from some viewers and listeners.
Yeah, tell us what you think about this episode, by all means. And tell us some of your theories and maybe what if you know something about Hispanic culture more than what we know about this, drop us a note and let us know maybe where this is going or what your theories are about this. Love to hear it.
Yeah, I would love to. Wait a minute.
Yes.
It's not Piper that plays that character. I think it's
the girl that plays Magda.
Natalie Dormer.
Yeah, and Townsend's assistant. It's all the same girl. Piper doesn't come in till later, I believe. I know she's in the show.
Now, which one's the baddie? Is it Natalie, the actress? Yes.
Game of Thrones and Hunger Games.
Her.
Yeah, she plays all those characters.
She plays Magda, she plays mm-hmm. Elsa, and she plays a third character.
Townsend's assistant.
Tell you what, she just oozes evil.
Yeah.
Through this. And she crops up, and I will tell you, she crops up in places you don't expect her to crop up in the later episodes.
Hmm.
You will not, you know, you just will not. It's like, oh, really? What a surprise.
Well, this is interesting.
I
just found it
interesting. Mm-hmm.
I just found an article that describes Magda as a shape-changing demon.
Really?
A shape-shifting demon. So that brings me to a question about the councilman's assistant, his personal secretary, who seemed to be the one calling the shots.
Well, that's Magda, too.
You think that's that is?
It's the same girl. That's Natalie.
Because she looks completely different.
Don't you think her... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'd say she plays multiple characters, and she looks different as each character, but she's an amazing actress that she can change like that.
The character that is the assistant, don't you think he looks kind of like the seamstress from The Invincibles?
seamstress from The Invincibles.
Remember the one that designed?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she does to me. From very beginning, I thought she looks just like the lady that designed their uniforms in the Invincibles.
Yeah.
Magda. The only Magda that keeps coming up to me is related to Penny Dreadful. I don't find.
Well, she may have been created for this. For the show.
Who takes appearance of anyone she chooses. Charismatic.
Oh, now all of a sudden this makes sense. She is the one pulling all of the strings with the Nazi party.
Yeah.
With Vega's brother and with the councilman. She is the one manipulating all the chess pieces to spark this race war to burn the world to the ground.
There you got it. Yeah. She's stirring that. That's what she's stirring that coals, firing up, making
listen,
the problems.
That's just for me watching one episode.
Yeah, she set the
one episode
meeting up with the German architect.
Right. Yeah. She's the serpent in everybody's ear. And she's stirring that pot, making everything. And you can be this and you can do that. And that guy's really out to get you. And, you know, you ought to stand up. Don't let him push you around. You got it.
Now I can't wait to watch the rest of the. Okay, so my opinion from the beginning of this discussion till now has completely changed. Now I'm like... invested. I can't wait to see the rest of it.
It's gonna be good.
You're gonna like the next two episodes.
Blake Wilson asks us a question. WB picked up Swamp Thing. Anyone excited? No.
I couldn't get into it. Yeah.
I didn't see it on
you know, it was on DC Universe. I didn't see it. It's really not my bag. So,
movies were good. Show I wasn't invested in. I couldn't get into it.
And it doesn't really pertain to our topic, but I thought I'd share his comment anyway. And we have a few more comments before we say goodnight. Ray Moore says, the CVC. What is that? The CVC?
No idea.
Maybe Ray can expand on that.
Yeah, I don't know, Ray. What is the CVC? And then... my friend Magi Jake says, which weapon would you use with your outfit, Corey?
Yeah,
I think he's like, with me. I forgot to bring my Thompson with me.
Oh, well, perfect.
I'm trying to modify it to make it a kind of cyberpunk, dieselpunk hybrid Thompson. So, but it's out in the living room.
Thompson's perfect.
Oh, yeah. I finally got one. I was so happy to get it. Thank you, Trump, and your stimulus package for giving me a Thompson.
So you guys got any last thoughts about Penny Dreadful, City of Angels?
I look forward to developing more. I can't wait.
You know, I'm further into it than you guys, and I can just tell you, it just stays good. And
good.
Yeah, I'm in episode 3, so far loaded last night. And it is. I ended it. My wife and I is just watching it. We love it. It stays good so far.
Maybe we need to think about doing a City of Angels declassified like we did with Man in the High Castle when we're on the other side of the season.
That'd be good. Excellent.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, really dissect it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, guys, we're a little bit over an hour. So I think it's time for us to say goodnight. And I appreciate everyone who's watching. As Larry said, we do want to hear from you. You can post comments on this video. You can post them to our page, send us a message in the Diesel Punks group, or send us an email at feedback@dieselpunkpodcast. And if you like what we're doing, you know, we had several of our fans step up to help cover the annual hosting costs. But, you know, every month there are still expenses and technology backdrops, you know, internet access. We'd love to have our own studio, and you guys can support us in that endeavor just by becoming a monthly patron at dieselpunkpodcast.com. Up in the top right, there's a little button that says support the show. And that would be great. We're not looking for a lot. Looking for $1, $2, maybe $5. But if enough people do that, there's nothing we can't do. And we would appreciate that. All right, guys. Larry, anything else going on that you want to make people aware of? Your blog, what is that website?
It is dieselpunk.info.
Dieselpunk.info.
.info. Yeah, I'm trying this blog weekly right now. Recently, I blogged about the fact that we had the 75th anniversary of VE Day. And more importantly, about the circumstances that led up to the war. You know, because, you know, those who don't learn from history,
doomed to repeat it.
Right. So, yeah, tune in. Like I said, I'm trying to do it weekly right now when I have the time. But thank you, Johnny. Thanks for bringing that up.
And there it is. Dieselpunk.info.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Look at that technology, Larry.
How about that?
Look at all the cool stuff we can do today.
Yeah.
We're big time.
Well, closer and closer. So when Larry and I started this podcast, we were literally using Soviet-era surplus.
That's right.
And there's even one episode, Corey, that went missing completely. Mm-hmm. The infamous episode number 10.
Oh, yeah.
We have no idea where it is.
Mm-mm. No. No, those are rough and rowdy days right there.
Yeah, yeah.
We're making it up.
We've come a long way. Yep, yep, we were. We were. Corey, anything else that you want to share with our viewers, our listeners? Any projects you got coming up that they need to be aware of?
I do have a big project, which I shared with you guys on Messenger that one day. Hopefully, in the next coming weeks, I will be able to reveal that to the world. I'm trying to tie up a few loose ends to get the last few pieces of the puzzle here. So hopefully in the next few weeks, I'll have a big, big announcement for it.
Outstanding. Can't wait. And of course, you can find my stuff at Big Daddy Cool Shows here on Facebook. Facebook.com/impossibilists. See what I'm up to with Dieselpunk Magic and Retropunk Cosplay. Cool. And with that, we'll call it a night, guys. Thanks for being with us. On behalf of Larry Amiet, Corey Hillesheim, I am John Pica, and thanks for tuning into the Dieselpunk Podcast. And if you like the show, tell 200-300 of your closest friends and family to come join the fun. And until the next time, we'll catch you on the flip side.